Welcome back to Conscious Leadership. Today, we're going to dive into a profound conversation about resilience, advocacy, and the conscious leadership that is required to navigate burnout. It's a topic that's really close to my heart, especially through me and my journey of creating empowerment evolution. Burnout, whether you're an advocate, a leader, or just simply pursuing your passions, it can be a silent adversary. Welcome to Conscious Leadership, the podcast where we dive into the heart of impactful thought leadership, one conscious step at a time. I'm your host, Dakota Lima, and together we'll explore the realms of self-awareness, empowerment, and purpose-driven leadership. Get ready to ignite your leadership potential and make a positive difference in your life and the life of those you lead. Well. It looks like we are all connected there. So today we are joined by the remarkable Lucy Delgadio, a veteran advocate, a diversity leader, and a conscious change maker. So today we're going to dive down in a journey about her life, some of the insights and strategies that she has used to have resilience in the face of adversity. So Lucy, thank you so much for coming on the show, and thank you so much for taking the time to share your story with my listeners and the conscious leaders out there, the thought leaders out there, and the women who are trying to find their voice. So please tell us a little bit about yourself.
First of all, thank you for having me. I'm really very, very honored to be here today with you. My name is Lucy Delgadio. I am an Afro-Latina, U.S. Army veteran. I'm a mom of four, proud wife. I'm a native New Jerseyan. I've been advocating in the veteran space since 2014. My advocacy started just with basic women VA rights benefits, what the lack of, let's just say, and homelessness, which is a very big issue here in New Jersey when it comes to the veteran population, especially women with children. Transition housing is very lacking. I was basically advocating in that front. In 2018, I ventured into establishing New Jersey as one of the few states that recognizes June 12th as Women Veterans Appreciation Day. So I was instrumental in writing that legislation. We got it passed in 2019. I also worked with, you know, Senator Booker, Senator Cory Booker, and Congresswoman Mikey Sherrill on trying to get that passed nationwide. And we still, you know, every year put it in to see if they would recognize it as a national type of day recognition. In 2020, on the height of Vanessa Guillen, I was, you know, Vanessa Guillen was a missing soldier, Fort Hood. And then they found her body in July. And I got involved in advocating in sexual assault, sexual harassment. I openly did not talk about my own sexual assault. And then I started little by little. And then in 2020, in July, I found myself testifying in front of the Congress and in front of Congress and the military personnel's committee on the Me Too military movement, Vanessa Guillen. And also just changing the policies on sexual harassment and sexual assault. I've been advocating for the last several years and then found myself, I have to say, a little bit burned out. And it really led me to really restructure a lot of what I've been doing now and changing my mindset and changing a lot. So I know that's where you want to start diving into.
Oh, I know, like you're breaking up a little bit. Okay, there we go. Your connection was okay. A little bit. Yeah. Okay, no, sure. I wanted to kind of talk a little bit about burnout for sure, but also not just even burnout. I feel like, you know, advocacy is such a huge cornerstone for leadership. You know, most people don't even, probably wouldn't even think about it in that sense, but it is, because for you to step out and put yourself out there to speak for people who don't have a voice, and that's pretty much what advocates are. Like, you are putting yourself out there to be that voice, to be that representative, to, like I said, speak for people who can't. And so it's such an important role that you played, so important so that the Army even thought so. And I forgot to mention this, and I apologize, that, you know, you were inducted into the Hall of Fame because of the
work. I'm being inducted in March. Being inducted into the class of the U.S. Army Women's Foundation is an organization, it's a not-for-profit, and they have an induction ceremony every year. I'm being honored in March of 2024 for the 2024 class. So I'm very excited about
that. That's such a huge accomplishment, because what you have done has helped change policies for the soldiers that are there now serving. You know, we are veterans, and you know, these things that happen to us during our military service, you know, a lot of times people just, okay, it happened, I'm just going to keep moving. But you're like, no, something needs to change. And it takes a lot of guts, and it takes a lot of confidence, and it takes a lot to do something like that. And so I just want to, you know, just recognize that, you know, not to take off, to stop talk about the burnout, but I just really wanted to put that out there, and just how important that is, because, you know, one of the things that I see for myself in the future, and even for this show, is to really capitalize on not just women leaders, but even women thought leaders. And, you know, when I think about a thought leader, or even just like if you Google a thought leader, those are the people who have opinions, the people who want to speak out, the people who inspire change, you know, because of what it is that they're talking about. They get people to think differently and see things from a different perspective, which inspires change. And it takes big, deep thinkers to become thought leaders. Thought leaders are just, in another sense, advocates, if you really think about it, because an advocate is someone who speaks up for change. And so it's like, and so one of the things that I want to do is recognize women thought leaders out there. And I feel like you are a huge step. You are a huge woman thought leader, like the changes and the things that you have done. But to bring the conversation back to the burnout, yes, I can imagine what you've had to go through to be able to get Congress to listen to what you had to say. You know, I know you were on the news. I know you've done a lot of different interviews, and you've communicated this to people, to so much to the point that, you know, they made some changes. And so what did that look like? And what, like, how was it that you found yourself being burnt out from all of the stuff that you were doing?
That's a great question. So, you know, when I entered the advocacy space, it was all on my personal experiences, my narrative. And, you know, when I first left the military, I left the military with no benefits whatsoever. In the 90s, if you were single and you were pregnant, they would deem you unfit to serve. And with that type of discharge, even though it is honorable, they would eradicate everything else based on it. So based on my assault, resulted in a pregnancy, and then I was removed from active to reserves. In that making, I struggled, but also I kind of diminished myself, and I kind of removed the identity of a veteran. It wasn't until about 2014 when I ran into a high school friend, and he knew all the struggles I was going through, but he also knew that I was kind of building myself up. You know, I guess like a phoenix, you rise from the ashes. I started rising through my ashes, And he was like, you know, you should really start talking to people about what you experienced and what changes need to be made, especially in the women's space. And the women's space is still a space that's very, very struggling. I mean, you saw today and yesterday, there was testimony based on what was going on in the Coast Guard. Same thing, you know, sexual assault, sexual harassment is still prevalent, regardless of all the changes that we've made the last few years. It's still going on. It's still part of tactical processes in the military. So I really didn't talk about my sexual assault and sexual harassment that I faced, but I definitely I was talking about the inequities that I witnessed in the whole space when it came to women, when it came to going to the VA, what treatment looks like, all that type of stuff, and especially transition housing, because there wasn't any existing for women. There was only a few beds here in the state of New Jersey, but if you had a child, you're out of luck. You're not going to find transition housing. You're going to struggle. So I started doing that type of work. So when Vanessa went missing, I tried to stay away from that narrative, that conversation, because it was triggering me. I have to say, I'm going to openly say this on your podcast, that as much therapy that I was in, the therapy conversation that I was having with my therapist did not include my sexual assault.
Wow.
So as much as I thought I was healed from trauma, I was talking more about generational trauma. I was talking more about trauma just in you know, therapy of my well-being. But I wasn't saying, hey, I have issues based on my trauma. So I, you know, started watching the news based on a conversation that I had with a friend who served with me. And he was like, so what are you going to do about this? Like, you know, I see you talk about everything else in this space. And when I see her, you know, she reminds me a lot about you. She's Latina. You know, a lot of the same kind of story was kind of the same. Latina trying to build equity, first generation, joining the military. It was very yin and yang, you know, very similar stories. So I was like looking into it, and I posted my first picture of myself. And then, you know, I am Vanessa Guillen. And a lot of people were doing that at the time. So they find her body. I get a phone call from a friend who's an advocate as well. She's like, hey, a bunch of us are going to jump on a Zoom call. Would you like to be part of this? We're going to see how we can activate this movement and try to call for legislation to, like, A, investigate what happened to her. But also, we could look at just overall what's going on in this case. And I said, sure. And that call uniquely changed my life, because I sat there with, like, a power of different women advocates that I've admired from afar because I was watching their work. And then I got involved, and it was a very quick action, you know, writing petitions, getting the signatures, what type of action are we going to go, you know, calling legislators. It was very, a lot of movement.
Yeah.
And I found myself in 21 days, because it was July 1st when we started this activation. We got our signatures, and I found myself in July 21st in D.C. in the House Triangle with a petition, handing it to Congresswoman Mikey Sherrill alongside Lindsay Church from Minority Veterans of America. And we both handed these signatures to Mikey Sherrill, to Congresswoman Sherrill, and said, these are the signatures. We are calling to action the open investigation of Fortified. Boom. So we did this. And then we had like a big rally in front of the White House. It's during COVID. So it was, you know, we were very careful and stuff like that. But we're in front of the, you know, White House, signs, you know, calling to action this type of legislation. I was on the train back to DC when I got the phone call, you know, from Congresswoman Jackie Spears. She was the head of the Military Armed Service Committee, Personnel Committee. Could you come back and testify in about a few weeks? And I said, okay. But it was really, I was like, okay. I said yes.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking to myself, holy shit. Like, I'm going to put myself out there.
Yeah. No, what did I just open up? Like,
so then, you know, the conversation with my husband, the conversation with my children, I'm going to put myself out there. And in those weeks, you know, a numerous amount of us, you know, getting phone calls from reporters, you know, doing a lot of work. So I was really in the weeds, but then writing testimony and making sure that, you know, the data's there and what we're going to ask for and how we're going to approach this, but also putting my narrative in there. So I go back to DC again, Melissa Bryant, who testified with me, Lindsay Church, Andrea Goldstein, they sat with me. We went over this testimony that we wrote. A lot of people were helping me, you know, demographics and all that good stuff. Yeah. And then, you know, I testified. Lindsay sat behind myself and Melissa. They were instrumental in making sure that if, you know, congressional had a question for us that we couldn't answer, they were on the phone, you know, making sure, and then they would hand it to us to make sure that we are saying what legitimately has to be said. Because let me tell you, it got heated. If you watch it, there was a lot of questions thrown at us, but we were heated because we watched the AG of the Army and the person from the Army who ran the SHARP program really say some asinine responses to the questions they were getting. So I'm kind of glad that they spoke first, because I was really like wired. But it was a very monumentous moment, I think, for me, because it was one of the first times that I saw women testifying on a topic like this, and it was two women of color, which was very, very important to us. Because usually, and you know, I don't want to offend anybody, it was usually white women with a token. And it wasn't like that. It was two, you know, Melissa, who is Black, I'm Latina, Afro-Latina, we both, you know, we're both there with our curly hair. We were ourselves, and we brought it. But, and then, you know, turning around for the next 2 years, really being involved in this sexual assault, sexual harassment fight. You know, Netflix approached me to be in the documentary. So it was a lot. But I didn't realize that I could have prevented a lot from happening if I would have taken care of myself and said no once in a while. I didn't have to say yes to every single approach that everybody was approaching me on, you know, every single interview, every single podcast, every single this, every single that. And, you know, on top of it, I was working on, I had a job, I was sustaining a family, I was, you know, doing everything.
Yeah.
And I have to say that one day I woke up and I really noticed that I wasn't being myself. I was really, I kind of have like a toolkit of things that I like to do, yoga, running, meditation, mindfulness, journaling. I had all these things and I wasn't doing any of them, you know? And I really
so like being pulled in like all these different directions that just
absolutely. And I was depleting. I am diagnosed with PTSD, and I try to practice med free. That's something I'm very, you know, I've always openly spoken about practicing med free. I found myself like really spiraling out of control. Yeah. Like I didn't know what I could handle, what I couldn't handle. And I started slowly trying to say like, I don't want to do this anymore, like to myself, but I wasn't saying it to everybody. That
do your headphones have like a microphone on them?
Could you hear it now?
No, I can hear you. I think your necklace is just...
Oh, my necklace is hitting it? I'm sorry.
Microphones every time.
Yeah, sorry.
Click. No, it's okay.
Yeah. Let me do this. Could you hear me better now?
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
I took some off, but... Yeah, because I'm beating. And you know me, my Latina-ness is all moving all over the place.
I was just thinking about it. And I was just like, oh my God, if like for people watching on video, it'll be whatever. But if somebody's like just listening, they're gonna be like, what is that noise?
That's my necklace, my heavy necklace. Okay. So
sorry, go ahead.
So I basically was spiraling internally, but not telling everybody that I was spiraling. But people were watching me spiraling and they were making judgment. You know, I have to say I faced a lot of judgment, but I faced a lot of judgment from others, but I faced a lot of, I was really
hard on myself.
So one day I went to speak in DC. And when I came back from that speaking engagement, I said, I can't do this anymore because I unraveled. I really unraveled in front of a multitude of people. I did not behave like myself. I was doing things that are not Lucy. Yeah. And I said, I'm taking a break. I need to step away from this. And, you know, I texted a multitude of people. And I said, enough is enough. You know, like I gotta get help. So I'm, you know, I stepped down from multitude of positions and I asked people just if they could give me grace and just not contact me about that, you know, about advocacy. So then the next step was walking into a vet center. And I did that. And I have to say, I don't want to say put my tail between my legs, but it sure felt like that. And I went and I walked into a vet center after, and I'll be very honest and open about it. I paced like a bridge for hours. I paced a George Washington Bridge for hours, contemplating like, what was I doing with myself? And then, you know, I told my husband, I need to see someone. I need to really start talking to someone, but I need to talk to someone about the right things. And I contacted I went to a vet center and I said, I need help. And I told them I'm a sexual assault victim and a survivor and I need assistance. And sure enough, I started seeking the right help. And it was like the first time that I actually sat with a therapist and talked about my trauma. And it's been really different. I have to say, I'm mentally, yeah. So it was like, wow, you really want to talk about my trauma and my narrative and what happened to me and what have I not done to get the help that I, you know, because I'm out there helping everybody else.
Yeah.
And I wasn't helping myself. And honestly, if you're doing this type of work, you need to be on top of yourself, your mental well-being. And so that's what I did.
I feel like that's kind of like a default that most women do. You know, we tend to take care of everybody else, you know, especially if you have children, it's like, you know, you're always like putting your kids before you. If you have a significant other, a lot of times, you know, you tend to look at their needs, and it's so easy to look at other people's needs and just say, okay, I can help. Oh, let me help, you know, and be that nurturer that we are naturally as women, right? But it's important to take a step back sometimes and say, okay, I need to nurture myself. I need
right.
to out and fill my cup and figure out what it is that I need right now so that I can show up for myself fully. And then I can show up for other people as well, right?
But it was so interesting though, how selfish I felt. I felt so much like, I wrote my first journal entry after like going into the vet center and waiting for the therapist to call me back for my first appointment. And one of the first few words I wrote were, my God, like how selfish could I be? And I remember looking at that going, but what's so selfish about taking care of myself? Like my cup is depleted. Like I am on empty. I am really on empty. And how is that a selfish action? And I read that over and over again. I still read it. I still go back to it and thinking like there's nothing selfish about it. There's no there's no harm in wanting to take care of yourself. And another thing I did was I worried about what everybody else was going to think. And I can't do that. I can't really worry about everybody else's feelings toward me stepping away from this, because I really needed to take care of myself. And, you know, when those loved ones around you realize, like, hey, Lucy, like, you're smiling more, you look better, you are talking, you know, with more rationale, you're being more of yourself, then I know I did something positive. Yes. But on the other respect, you know, I lost individuals that, you know, that I thought were my friends, and they, you know, they've gone away and things to that nature. And, you know, honestly, it is what it is.
So anytime you do something for yourself and you're elevating yourself, you're expanding your awareness, you're tapping into what it is that you need, that naturally does happen. I feel like, you know, there's like a saying, it's not quite coming to me right now, about, like, you know, you have people in your life for seasons, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so there's people that are there for purposes and different reasons, and not everyone's meant to be with us the whole time, you know? And
I'm an avid book reader. Yeah. So what I basically said was, there's a multitude of people in the last few years that have been chapters of my book.
Yes.
You know, and I'm moving, you know, just,
and you just turn, you know, just
turns out, start that new chapter, you know,
last the whole story, but not every,
yes,
the whole story,
you know? But also, you know, like Shakespeare said, what's done cannot be undone. I can't change the actions that I did when I was in my unraveling. Yeah. You know what I mean? But I could change the person that I'm slowly becoming. But remember, and I posted it today, a quote that I saw that I thought was like, oh, I love this quote, and I'm going to post it today. It says, and let me see if I could find it, because I was like, this really resonated with me, was here. I came across a quote that said, if you went back and fixed all the mistakes you've ever made, you would erase yourself. And that's all I ever needed to hear. Like, I can't erase, you know, anything that I did negatively when I was in my spiral, but I could definitely make change so I'm feeling a better about myself, and I can make those around me feel better.
I mean, and really, that's like kind of the essence of what thought leadership, like, you're looking at your past mistakes as lessons. You can't erase those, because those are the things that turn you into who you are. You know, the decisions that we make when we're faced with different adversities make or break you. You know, you can always choose to lay down or give up, or you can choose to say, okay, no, I'm going to push. Okay, I need to make a change. Because instead of just giving up, like you said, you were pacing the bridge. You were on the brink of giving up. But then instead of giving up, no, there's another way. I need to just take time for me, you know, I know that there's people out there, they're going through this, you know, like, there's new moms that are overwhelmed and don't know what to do if you have, you know, like, the baby screaming and you're trying to cook and you're trying, you know, or, you know, I saw a TikTok, it wasn't that long ago, like maybe like 2-3 weeks ago. And there was this young woman, she couldn't have been any older than like 22, 25, you know, young, early 20s. And she was talking about just working full time. And she literally broke down crying about having to commute to work and work all these hours and then commute back and then just being exhausted. And because, you know, you want to do your best. So, like, you give your best at work. And then so by the time she's home, she's tired. She doesn't have any energy to cook, doesn't have any energy to go out and hang out with friends, doesn't have energy to work out. She goes, I don't even have energy to date. Like, how do you even meet people? You know, like, she literally had a breakdown. And, you know, people in the comments, it's funny because, you know, people in the comments are like all these new young, you know, people, they joke and stuff. But the point of that is, like, it's just, she's understanding that she needs a change. Like, this is not for her. You know what I mean? Like, and regardless of what it is, it doesn't matter if it's you going to work every day, or if it's you staying home and raising, or if you're you know, doing grassroots advocating like you were doing, you know, like it, or if you're trying to build a business, or if you're trying to build a following, or whatever it is you're trying to build, and create. You always
boundaries. Yes, you and always. I had no boundaries whatsoever, and I had to start creating boundaries and telling people, like, I'm sorry, no, I really can't do this, but I could either point you in the right direction so you can get the assistance, or I could, you know, help. I could just really get you to get the help that you need. And I've had to say that a lot lately, and I'm okay with it. Before I wouldn't, I would say, no, I'll put it, I'll take care of it. Why am I doing this to myself? I can't remedy everything.
Yeah.
And it's been very interesting. Like I've been journaling every time I say no. It's like, oh my God, I said no to this, and this is why I
yeah.
You know, but
and that's really good, because that's a way for you to reflect and really just solidify to yourself that you made the right decision. You know, I did this for me. And, and it's not selfish to do something for yourself. I think, like, that's how we've been conditioned to believe that if you ever take care of yourself, you're being selfish. If you
absolutely, but as Latina, people. Look, as Latina women, you know this. We are programmed to take care of everybody
else,
and our needs are secondary. And, you know, we are programmed in that way. And honestly, right now, my needs are really primary. Like, I'm taking care. I'm feeling like my cup is full right now. And I'm very happy about it. And like yesterday when I saw my therapist, she's like, so how are you feeling? What have you been up to lately? And I go to her, I woke up this morning. That was step number one. I woke up this morning. I did, you know, I you know me, I run. So I've been doing my running now, more, you know, not as frequently as I was when I was training for the marathon, but I'm out there running.
Yeah.
And doing my, now I really immerse myself back into my yoga, something that I had completely let go of. And now I'm immersed back into my yoga. So I'm really, really taking care of myself, meditating every day again, something that, again, I stopped doing. So I woke up yesterday. I woke up this morning. I'm really, again, my dimensions are starting to go back to the things that were healthy to me. You know, I also made a decision. I'm a menopausal Mary. I'll be right. It's part of my issues right now. And again, I've been trying to practice med-free for several years now, and I made the decision of going on meds for my menopause. And that, I think, also made a very substantial change in a lot of the ways that I've been feeling and the way I've been, you know, reaction to everything. So definitely self-health, you know, keeping yourself healthy, keeping yourself healthy. You know, mentally healthy, not just physically healthy, but mentally healthy, is definitely something that for my burnout, I've definitely been working on.
And I like to look at it as a mind-body connection approach, because I feel like if you just have the mental clarity and your body's physically shit, then you're still not going to be doing good. And then if you have the physical health, but your mental clarity is crap, you know, so it really does have to be, you do have to take care of both. You have to understand what it is that you need. But self-awareness is kind of rooted in this. And I talk about self-awareness a lot when it comes to leadership, because I feel like to be any type of leader, it doesn't matter if you're trying to be a servant leader, you know, a transformational leader, a thought leader, just a leader in general, you have to be self-aware, because the more aware you are of you, then you know how you affect the people around you and what that affects you. You know what stuff around you is going to affect you. Like you were saying,
absolutely,
right? Like you got triggered and there's different things that trigger us, but until you know yourself, you don't know how to deal with those triggers. You don't know how to set boundaries. Like you can see a boundary being crossed and nope, can't do that, you know, but if you don't have any sense of who you are, then yeah. you're not going to even notice that that boundary. And
I'll share a story with you. So, you know, I did the New York City Marathon this year.
Yes. Yeah.
And I did not train the way I trained like the first time I did my New York City Marathon. Like when I trained for the first time I did it in 2018, I trained like a machine. Like I was like out there like boom, boom, boom. But this time, again, I was going through this mental burnout process. And my running was there, but it wasn't quite there, you know? So a few days before the marathon, I really started, like, I amped up a few weeks before the marathon was going. I really felt like I was going to do it. And all, honestly, I wasn't trying to break any records. I wasn't, trust me, I'm not out there to break. I'm not going to do a 2-hour marathon. There's no
way. Yeah.
Basically, I wanted to finish. And I wanted to finish near my last two times in that avenue. That was my goal, just to finish, just to cross the finish line. Okay. So I got a text from an individual that I had trained with before. And they said to me, you know, I'm concerned about your run. And I said, really? I said, why are you so concerned about my run? Oh, because I haven't seen you posting and I don't think you're going to finish it. And I said, really? So because you haven't seen me posting how far I ran or how often I'm running, you really don't think I'm going to finish it? Like, this is what you're trying. This is what you're sending me. You're supposed to be your person that at one point sent me positive affirmations.
Yeah. And what's with you?
And what you're telling me is like, you're going to fuck up.
Yeah.
So and they like, no, that's not what I meant. And I'm like, well, yes,
meant
that's how
a good place, but didn't come across.
So then he goes, I don't think you're going to finish. So I was like, okay, whatever you want to think about, you go ahead and you think that, you know? So I started running and I started seeing this text in my head and I'm going, Lucy, you cannot see this text in your head. Like, you are going to finish this. And every time I started feeling like, okay, my knee hurts, my hip hurts.
Yeah.
I'm hungry. Should I stop and pee? I kept on seeing this text. Like, you're not going to finish this. And I'm like, Lucy, you got to
stop. I'm finishing.
You got to stop doing this. But what happened was I got to the park and you know that you're finishing the marathon when you start seeing Central Park. You know, you're like, okay, I've got this. And I'm not going to give up. Like, I'm going to finish this. But I was really like, I felt depleted. I had a little bit of a breakdown in the Bronx. I saw some friends, but they got me, you know, they gave me some coconut water. And I have to say that coconut water does rehydrate you, people.
Yeah, like, it does. Yeah.
So,
it does.
I got to the park and I ran into my friend Devin, and she just reinforced the fact that this is your race. You're not doing it for anybody else. And I want you to like just amp it up. Like, amp up, just go and get it. And I just finished that race and I finished it 10 minutes less
like
than when I ran it faster than when I ran it with the person that sent me the text. So I was like, so I felt so good. I felt so wonderful. So what I did was I took a selfie of myself, all sweaty, with my poncho on, with my medal, and I sent to them and I go, I finished.
Yeah.
And I look at that picture and I'm like, I never wanted something as bad as finishing that marathon for myself.
Yeah,
because I felt, again, the last few months before the marathon, I felt so depleted that I actually accomplished something by myself. I did it with no music on, something that I usually do. I run with music. I put no music on. It was just me and my thoughts and running 26.2 miles.
I've only done a half. I've never done the full. Okay. So I've done a few half marathons, but I'm only going to half. So, and I remember how my body felt after the half, but I told myself one day I will do a full just so I can like, oh, I did it full as well, you know, Mark. Yeah.
So I always tell my husband after I run, I'm like, if I sign for one next year, like, tell me not to. I was in the kitchen with him just now. I'm like, so I'm thinking of doing another marathon next year. And he's looking at me like, didn't you say you don't want to do one? I'm like, yeah, but I don't want to do New York next year. And I don't want to do the Marine Corps. So I'm thinking of looking for another marathon. And
I'm on course now.
I'm probably going to do Chicago. I want to see if I could do two marathons next year. So
maybe I'll join you. Maybe I'll jump on the marathon bandwagon and train myself to do a full, because like I said, I've only done a half and I have always wanted to do a full. So maybe I'll do a full next year. No, it's so great. Like, I love that how you were just like, no, I don't care what you say. I'm finishing this. Is that the picture you sent us in the group when you're like that big cheesy smile on your face? Yeah. Like, yes, here's my medal.
Yes.
Shove it in.
Yeah, it was so, you know, because my family waits for me every year. Like, I know where I'm going to see people throughout the course. And I saw one of my good friends in Queens. And then I saw people in the Bronx. I saw people in Midtown. So I saw people all over the place.
Yeah.
And but my family always waits for me in the last stretch, like right before you start getting to like the finish line. And when I see them, I'm like, okay, I know I'm
yeah, I'm like at the finish line. Yeah.
At the finish line. And it's just so it's a really incredible natural high. It really is. I can't explain it. It really is. And I started running at 46. It's not like I was a runner before that. I mean, I ran in the military, but I definitely started like running like 5Ks and 10Ks and marathons at 46. So I'm 52 now. So it's definitely, again, it's part of my toolkit. It's part of my getting myself back together. So
no, that's good. And I think as long you should keep doing them as long as you love them. And even if you don't want to do fulls, you can always cut it down to halves and tens. But I wouldn't stop running. Like, you just love it so much. So it doesn't make sense to stop, you know. And races are fun. You know, for those of you who've never done one, doing a race is so different than just going to work out and run. It's like not the same thing at all, you know, because you can go do a 5K, and even if you don't run it, you can walk it, and you can do walk, run, jog, you know, just the experience and the camaraderie of all the people on doing the course, and then the people on the side, and then the swag and stuff that you get after. I don't know. I always thought it was fun. I always had a good time doing them. I used to bring my kids to the 5Ks and stuff like that as well. And I did it. It was one of the things that I did just to, because again, you said, like you said, when you're in the military, you got to run. And I'm like, if I'm running, I might as well run for something else too. And it also just kind of kept me in that mindset of running all the time. And so I haven't done a race since I got out of the military, but, I always
and I'm gonna have to come to Florida and run with you.
There you go. There you go. Yeah, you're gonna have to like, come on, let's go.
Let's go.
But no, Lucy, like I think that's awesome. And I'm happy that you won, like you finished. Well, you won. I'm like, you won, you beat it, because he told you no, but you know what I mean? Like, I'm happy that you were able to complete it and complete it faster. And it's like, it's kind of like it's such a good ending. You know what I mean? It's like, yes, you know, when someone doubts you and you're able to find that inner strength to say, no, I'm going to keep going anyway. You know, and that is all important. That's all important for anything in life, you know, because anytime you do something, especially when you put yourself out there, you're going to have people who are hating on you. You're going to have people who doubt you. You're going to have people who question you. You're going to have people who want you to fail as well. You know, it's not even always people rooting in your corner, but when you put yourself out there, you got to find somehow that mental toughness to be able to say, even with all of your doubt, I'm still going to keep pushing and do it. And so, like, yeah. That's so great that you're
and
like,
self-doubt is your worst enemy at times.
Yeah.
Because let me tell you, I've sat here sometimes and really questioned, like, okay, why are you doing this? Like, you know, and the negative talk could be very, very detrimental when you're trying to self-advocate or you're advocating for others, because why is your voice so important? Like, I can't tell you, like, the imposter syndrome, the self-doubt, the lack of positive affirmations that you're providing yourself. It's really something that people struggle with, and I struggled with it. I really, really struggled with what I heard others saying and those negative chatter that I heard, and really taking that narrative on. And it's like, why am I doing this to myself? I know exactly who I am. Nobody knows me better than me.
Yeah.
And why am I going to take on a persona of negativity? Because ultimately, the people that are negative around you, the people that want you to fail. And I didn't want to be, it's unhealthy. It's not healthy to be around those, that individuals that really want you to fail. And I slowly removed those individuals from my life, because I know who wants me to succeed, because they are still here. They're still around me. I know the people that didn't want me to succeed, because they are, you know, they're gone. And that's basically it. And you know what? You know, bye. There's nothing more graceful than basically not having to fight about it. If you want to walk out, go ahead. I'm not going to fight.
A lot of times too, it's a reflection of themselves anyway. When people are sitting there talking about you not being able to do something, or you not finishing, or you not this or that or whatever, and they have that negativity going towards you, it's a lot of times rooted in their own self-doubt. Because mm-hmm. if we fail, then that's a reason for them to not have to try. You know what I'm saying? Because you tried and you didn't do it. So what's the even point of them trying? Because if you try something and you succeed, then it's like, oh my God. So what's the easiest thing for them to do? To put doubt in you to help you not
succeed. Exactly. And one of the other things I did during this whole quest, this whole journey that this burnout journey that I've been taking care of is I did a Ragnar race. And these are like, it's like a race. It's like basically it's a relay race that you do with others, and you do it in a team. And you have 24 hours to run X amount of miles. And sometimes in yours, you're in these really crazy courses, and sometimes you have to run in the middle of the night. So here I am. I have to run almost 6 miles in the dead of night in this wooded area here in New Jersey called Wayonda. The elevation is about 1,300 feet. I didn't know that when I registered for this. And I had to go out there. And it was just me, my headlamp, a little lamp. And I hear wolves. People saw bears. I had seen a bear earlier that day. And the mental process of that. And I remember saying to you and saying to others, I felt like I had a vision quest out there, because I ran there. I didn't want to do it. I was trying to tell myself, okay, your stomach hurts. Tell them see if someone else could go for you. I told myself everything negative not to go and do this. But I said, you know what, Lucy, you're here as a team. You're a team, you know, let's do this. Like, get out there and run. And it was raining. And there was one point, I think I was like 3 or 4 miles into the woods, and I started going downhill. I had just finished doing the incline, and I was about to start going down, and I decided to turn off my headlamp, and it was just pitch dark.
Oh my God.
And I turned off the lamp, and had a little flashlight in my hand, and I turned, and I just felt like it was just me. And I did it for like, I did it for 50, 60 meters in. And then I put the headlight out, and I was like, I could do this. Like, I don't need the lamp. I don't need this light. I just need myself, me to do this. So it was very interesting. And when I finished it, I was like, I finished this. I couldn't really believe that I actually did this. And here I am again thinking, okay, like, I'm going to do a Ragnar next year. do it again. But this is the thing, don't give up. Like, I really thought about just hanging my hat of advocacy up because I burnt out. And I have to say, I'm still in that process. I'm being very selective. Like, you know, when you asked me, I said, absolutely. I'm being very, very mindful of who I'm talking to, why I'm talking to people, who is, you know, who needs to hear this? Because people need to hear this. Everybody sees this side of the advocacy hat, the work that we've done, the actions that we took steps, the positives, the fight that we fought. Everybody sees that. Nobody sees that, you know what, when we close our doors at night and we're sitting in our rooms, we have feelings going through us. And sometimes some people tap into them better than others. But the realization is that if you're not healthy, you're not mindful, and you let yourself deplete, your cup deplete, then trust me, it's going to be like a desert out there, and it's going to be very, very hard to find water. I'd rather people find the water before it's completely gone than not. You know, you got to take care of yourself. It's really important, because the better you are, the sharper you are, you're going to be more with whatever is going on. So I'm grateful that even when we did our women's leadership program, where we had the opportunity to meet each other and we've bloomed this relationship, I was still in that precipice. I was still trying to see if this is what I really wanted to do and finish this leadership program. And it was one of the things that actually filled my cup, because I went there with an identity that people didn't know who I was. And they didn't know Lucy was the sexual assault advocate. They knew Lucy was a woman veteran leader. And that was nice. It felt so good to walk into a room with other women leaders and say, we are all here because what's the quality that we all are leaders. So it was really, really, it was really great.
Yeah, no, that's great. And, you know, just kind of to piggyback on what you were saying, like, you know, it's important to, like you said, fill your cup, to let people know what's going on, to let people know that the behind the scenes, because see, I don't think people even understand, even when you were in it before, what one of the reasons why, not one, but you know, there's multiple reasons into the burnout, but you know, people don't understand. People are reaching out to you constantly saying that, oh, me too, me too, me too. Like, you know, I was affected by this too. I'm affected by this too. And you know, anytime you're stepping out and putting yourself out there, because one of the other things I talk to and I talk about on some of my pages is people putting out content, you know, putting yourself out there on social media. And I used to be so against that before. It's so crazy. Like, I had this fear of judgment for the longest time. And that's stuff that I worked on myself, you know, trying to deal with my own inner traumas when I was going through my healing journey. But you know, like, I'm over that now. But so for the longest, I didn't want to do anything with social media, you know what I mean? But just the way the world is shifting and the way things have kind of the trajectory of things, if you want to do anything, you have to put something out somewhere, right? Because that's where everyone is. Not everyone watches the news anymore. Most people are scrolling. So if you're trying to advocate for anything, you really need to be putting information out on social media. And so I tell people that, but as soon as you become like an influencer, which is also, you know, an advocate is an influencer, you're influencing change. And people are going to start reaching out to you. People are going to start asking you for help. People are going to, hey, you know that you do this, you do that. And that becomes, that's a lot, because when you are like the type of person you are, where you are already putting everyone else before you, and now you have these other people reaching out to you for help, what do you feel like you want to do? Oh my God, I want to help, right? Because you put yourself out there anyway as that. But it's so important, like you said, you have to be able to set those boundaries. You have to be able to understand when you can help someone, when you can't, you know, you need to be able to be selective. Like you said, okay, yes, I can do this, but no, I'm not going to do that. And it's so important to get to that point. And in order to get to that point, you know, you kind of got to know yourself. And
yeah. And I don't want to, you know, I know the whole social media aspect of it. And you know, the status of like saying you're an influencer and things to that nature. I've never been good with that type of like when people say, you know, I'm not a TikToker. I don't have a TikTok account. I don't, you know, I know myself. I know where my limits are, you know what I mean? But I definitely feel that, you know, have I made change? Yes. I think I was in a really great position where I met a very, very important group of individuals, and we made some incredible change together. We really did. That grassroots movement that I was part of, I mean, those individuals were just instrumental. The way we worked, there was a really incredible synergy with us. Yeah. You know, all of us are doing things that are still making change and are influencing things to this day. But, you know, I don't want to say that I'm X, Y, and Z, you know what I mean? It's just not but I totally understand. I know people that, you know, call themselves influencers and are not taking care of themselves. I know people that are, you know, that again, that call themselves influencing. Yeah, you're influencing things, but you have to be mindful of how you're influencing individuals, because I rather influence people and say, look, healthy mind will get you far. And, you know, burnout is real.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna hide it from everybody that I burnt out, and I'm okay with saying that. So
yeah, and but you're still here with us. Like you said, I got up today, right? And so
I totally get up today. Yes.
And you know, and that in and of itself in of itself is amazing, because you know, as we wrap up the episode today, I just wanted to hit on a couple of little things. And you know, overcoming burnout is all about harnessing your inner resilience. You know what I'm saying? Like you have to know what your limits are. You have to understand your capacity, and you can be more impactful that way. You know what I'm saying? Because you can, like we were saying, your cup is filled. Now you can share your overflow with other people, and you can actually probably influence even more, probably make more change, because now you're going to have more energy. And so now when you're showing up to wherever you're going to be going to, you're more vibrant, you're more yourself, and you know, your mind is sharper. You can like think faster and, you know, and be kind of like, just like ready for action. So yeah, it's definitely, a huge thing is just the making sure you understand who you are, self-awareness, self-discovery, taking care of yourself, self-care. Those are all instrumental parts of being an effective leader and no matter what area and what field of expertise that you are in. Mm-hmm. But Lucy, thank you so much again for taking the time to come and talk to us and let us know if there's anything, any way other people, if they would like to jump in on type of any, are you doing any other advocacy for this particular thing as of now? Like, do you have that you are
right now? No, actually, I'm kind of, I've still, you know, people, I'm still in support of different organizations like the, you know, Minority Veterans of America and the Pink Berets, two very impactful organizations that were part of the grassroots movement. They're both spectacular organizations that if you are in any way, shape or form looking to reach out and do advocacy work on a multitude of women efforts, definitely, you know, those two organizations I'm wholeheartedly support. support, by all means. Both of them are on social media, you know, NVA, Pink Berets, both extraordinary organizations. So, you know, they are definitely the organizations that I put my full 100% behind.
Awesome. So if anyone would like to reach out to you for whatever reason, I don't know, I guess you could reach out to you in your LinkedIn, right?
Yes, I'm in LinkedIn. I'm Lucy Delgadio. I'm also on social media, on Instagram. I'm at Lady Del DJ. right now I'm either posting about cooking, I love going to concerts, and my granddaughter. Those are like the things that I'm focusing on in my running journey, because I do post about, like, you know, my running, because again, it's part of my toolkit and something very important to me. So I post about that now. So,
and your yoga. Yeah.
And my yoga. Yes. The other day I did post, my dog did yoga with me the other day. He would not get off my mat. So I said, okay, if you're going to sit here, then you're going to do yoga with me. So my 55-pound lap dog did yoga with me the other day. So he was on the mat with me. So
I know my dog, she, every time I try to go do, if I'm stretching or anything, she's like right there. I'm like, I did not put the mat down for you to lay on. Like, this is for me, you know?
Yep.
It's so funny, but yeah. So thank you so much. Like I said, for taking the time to be with me today. Thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of Conscious Leadership. I hope today's insights have ignited your passion for empowered and purposeful, purpose-driven leadership. So if you really like what you heard, please like, share, and subscribe, and you know, share this with other leaders that you think would benefit. So until next time, keep thriving, keep leading, and keep growing. Thank you.